that Moshe Rabbeinu does after the receiving of all the materials that were necessary for the Mishkan. And he describes how much he received. Vayhi zehavat nufo, teisha ve'esri kikor, u'shva meyos, u'shloshim shekel ve'shekel akoros. Okay, the amount that he receives. And the Gemara learns out from here that gabay tzedoko, someone who is the treasurer, even though when people appointed him the treasurer, they already showed the confidence that he wouldn't steal, but the gabay himself has the obligation to give an account. This is why the Torah goes into the details of what Moshe Rabbeinu said to the people, that he gave him an account, in spite of the fact that nobody actually suspected him. Then it says in Pasuk Chof Hei, V'chesef pekudeyo eido. What about the silver? Me'as kikor. Tells you the amount. Something which is 100 kikors of silver. And besides the 100 kikors of silver, they also had the 1,000, u'shvameyos, v'chamisho v'shivim shekel, v'shekel hakodesh. So what is the total amount of silver that he gathered? 100 kikor, whatever that means, that is, we'll see right away in Rashi, plus 1,775 shkolim of silver, measures of silver. Says Rashi in Pasuk Chof Dalet, kikor, shishim mone umono shel kodesh kofu l'hoyo. It tells you how to figure out the amount called the kikor. So we'll skip to the haray. We won't go into the details how he makes the cheshbon. Haray kikor shel kodesh. Do you know how much a kikor is? Shloshes alofim shkolim. 3,000 shkolim. So if it says here, you see Rashi says 3,000 shkolim, keep the amounts clear here. 3,000 shkolim is one kikor. And if it says here that they collected 100 kikor, so it's exactly 300,000 shkolim plus 1,775. Okay? Why? Simple, it has to be that way. Why? Because, says the Torah in Pasuk Chovov, Beka lagul goles machatzis ha-shekel v'sekel ha-kodesh. The silver was gathered not by donations that people made on their own free will. How was the silver gathered? By half a shekel per person. And how many Jews were there above the age of 20? Mi ben esrin shalovo malo, 600,000 in Pasuk Chovov, u'shloshes alofim, v'chamesh meos, v'chamishim, 600,000 plus 3,550. So, figure it out. If 603,550 people give a half a shekel, so what? How many shkolim do you have altogether? 301,000, right? 775. This is clear, right? Now, how many shkolim was gathered from 603,550 Jews, right? 603,550 Jews gave a half a shekel each. So how many shkolim were there altogether? 301,775, correct? Right? Yes? Now, if 300,000 shkolim make up 100 kikors, remember, because the kikor is the 3,000 shekel according to our tradition. True? So therefore, the amount comes out exact. Everything is fine. True? Everything is straight. Fine. Let's go on.
What will go up to the other one?
No, everything else. Shekel HaKodesh, that's okay. That's what it is. The Shekel HaKodesh. Now, the Kikor is 3,000 Shekel HaKodesh. That's how Rashi says. Now, let's go on to Posuk Chof Zayin. What was done with the silver? So, the following. Vayehi me'as kikar ha-kesef. So what was done with the total amount of silver is the following. The 100 kikor was used lotzekes es adnei ha-kodesh for the sockets, right? The sockets that are like the faces of the tabernacle where you fit in the boards, the sockets, the silver sockets, took up exactly how much again? 100 kikor. In other words, how many shkolim was taken up by the sockets? 300,000. And in Pasuk Chofres, and what happened to the other 1,775? Veso elef in Pasuk Chofres. Veso elef shva meyos v'chamishim v'shivim. You know what he did, Moshe Rabbeinu? Oso vovim lamudim. He made vovim. You know what vovim is? Hooks. It looks like a bow. Hooks. That's why it's called vovim. Now, isn't it very, very strange? When we usually, when you say the amount of how many Jews went out of Egypt, now the Torah never mentions a few million. The numbers that are usually mentioned is what? What is the number that's usually mentioned? 600,000. That's the number which we accept by our tradition. 600,000. Now, we are not being exact when we say 600,000. Because the exact amount is 600,000 plus 3,550. Right? It's clear. But for some reason, we always forget about the extra 3,550. Right? Now, it can't possibly be a coincidence because the rabbis wouldn't forget. And when the rabbis mention the amount, they always say, Shishim Ribo. This is where, throughout the Gemara, whenever you talk about Yotzei Mitzrayim, the ones who left Egypt, it's Shishim Ribo. 60 Ribo. You know how much Ribo is? 10,000. 10,000. This is how the rabbis say. They never mention 603,550. Well, but you know, it makes a tremendous difference. You see, if it would be 600,001, 600,002, okay, but 3,550 people, it makes an enormous difference. And you can say, well, as long as it doesn't make a halachic difference, then the rabbis weren't so exact. Well, it does make a halachic difference. Do you know where it makes a halachic difference? Whether there are 600,000 or 603,550 concerning Rishus HaRabim HaShabbos. There is an opinion which, by the way, we paskin by. There is an opinion which says that if you know that the total amount of people going through a certain road will be 600,000, then it becomes a Rishus HaRabim, public property, and you can't carry, according to the biblical law, between private property and that street. What about if you add the total and you see that it's impossible that more than 599,999 people can go in there because there aren't any more people than that? Well, then it's not a Rishus HaRabim. That is the number that makes the difference between Rishus HaRabim and what's called Carmelis, which means a non-Rishus HaRabim according to Torah law. So you can't say that the rabbis use the number 600,000 as a round figure. Because that would only make sense if they just use it to remind you of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, or the people who went out of Egypt. But once they apply it to halacha, that means that it's exact. But it's not exact. How can they use that amount?
The 600,000 per day, that it costs.
The what?
That is
a problem. The problem is, do you actually need 600,000 people actually going through? And if so, they say, well, only Times Square in New York or maybe Piccadilly Circus in London would be a Rishus HaRabim d'oraisa. Most people say it has to be that it's potentially possible for 600,000 people. For instance, if it's a wide street in a large city, it's considered like 600,000 people could go there. I mean, it's not 100% clear what the Gemara means, but in any case, it's a crucial number, the number 600,000. Whatever it means, it's a crucial number. But it's even stranger, the Medrash here. The Medrash brought down here in the Medrash Rabbah, Yalkut Shimoni, and the Mefarshim bring it down, that Moshe Rabbeinu, while he was giving the account, while he was giving the account of what he did with the silver, said, and what I did with the silver was, I made the sockets, silver sockets for the boards. And he forgot what happened to the rest of the silver. And he said to himself, I can't allow myself to forget, because they will say that Moshe is a thief. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to himself. And in that moment he remembered, I know what I did with the extra 1,775 shekel. You know what I used it? I used it for hooks. Now, anybody who has any experience with Midrashim, you know that this Midrash can't be taken superficially. You know that this is Moshe Rabbeinu didn't all of a sudden forget and all of a sudden remember. And you also realize that it's too much of a coincidence, the exact separation between 600,000 half shekels that were used for what? Exactly 600,000 half shekels were used for what? For the sockets. Exactly. Right? And what happened to exactly 1,775 shekels? Just for the hooks. And this 1,775 shekels correspond with which number of people? 3,550, which by coincidence, quote unquote, is the amount which is extra over the 600,000. So you sense that here there is something which is going on. What is really going on? So we find the following insight in the Mefarshim here. You know that the number 600,000, as we said before, is not of Yotzei Mitzrayim physically. When the rabbis use the number 600,000, it's not of the physical Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people who went out of Egypt. Because in reality, we know that there were a few million people going out of Egypt. I mean, if there were 600,000 plus males above the age of 20, there must have been a few million people. But somehow the number 600,000 represents those Jews that made up the Jewish people when they went out of Egypt.
Is that meant to be the exact number of men out of Egypt?
Again?
Is it meant to be the exact number of men?
But it's not. It's not. It's 603,550. According to the Balei Kabbalah. Yeah?
Could it be like 3,000 Erev Rav and...
Alright, we'll see right away. According to the Balei Kabbalah, the 600,000 Jews who went out of Egypt are 600,000 Jewish souls who went out of Egypt. Because according to our tradition, there never were and never will be any more than 600,000 Jewish complete souls. So you're going to wonder, so how can there be? There were millions of Jews and only 600,000 original souls. How can it be? Well, we can understand it. I mean, the description of what they have concerning the system is very similar to like a genetic system. It means that we are composites of different souls that make up one soul, which means one soul can be a combination of 100 different souls or 1,000 different souls or maybe 100,000 different souls. You're a composite of like a code. It's like as if like the soul is represented into like a genetic code that is transferred from one generation to the next, and the total amount of Jewish souls that you can possibly combine is 600,000. But how many times can you combine them? Trillions of times. There is no limit to how many Jews there can be in the world. But no matter how many Jews you're going to have in the world, they will never have altogether more than the 600,000 original souls. Did you ever hear this concept? It's a very well-known concept in the Kabbalah. They call it Odom HaKadmoy, the 600,000 souls which make up the original Odom. Yeah.
How do they account for converts?
All right. How do they account for converts? Right. How do they account for converts? So, first of all, according to the Kabbalistic method, there are two types of converts. There is a Ger Tzedek. A Ger Tzedek means a Gentile who had an uncontrollable drive to become Jewish, that with everything that was done to talk him out of it, he decided to join. The only reason such a thing can possibly happen, right? Remember, we are talking when it's not convenient to become Jewish, because if when it's very convenient to become Jewish, you don't accept it. Remember, you know what the halacha says? Loi kiblu geirim bizman Shloimo HaMelech, loi kiblu geirim bizman David HaMelech. Jews were too successful. You were just joining the winners. Oh, so therefore we can't accept Gentiles into Judaism. We suspect their motives. So we have what?
Why did Moshe Rabbeinu take the Arabah?
Good. So that's a question that Hashem asked Moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, you know that Hashem asked Tanya to Moshe Rabbeinu, why did you take the Arabah? So we once spoke about it. What his plan was with the Arabah. But when a Gentile becomes Jewish, even though it's not his style to become Jewish, and he has nothing to gain materially of becoming Jewish, and he still wants to become Jewish, and he's told all the difficulties, and he still wants to become Jewish, it's only for one reason, says the Ari, that was a Jewish soul in a Gentile body. That's what Ari Zal says. So it's a Jewish soul in a Gentile body. And he brings a proof from a Midrash. And the Midrash is pretty clear. The Midrash says that every Gentile who becomes Jewish will be asked, why did you wait so long? This is the Midrash. So he says, what does it mean? Is there an obligation for a Gentile to become Jewish? There's no obligation. How can you ask them why he waited so long? Says the Arizal, that proves my point. That once he became Jewish in this way, then that's a sign that his soul was always Jewish. So why did you wait so long? Right? That's why the Gemara, in the Midrash, it says, Ruth had a good answer. I never had a chance before. The first chance I had to become Jewish, I became Jewish. Because Ruth had one of those Jewish souls that was coming back home. It was a lost Jewish soul that somehow got lost, and now through this Gentile converting, he's coming back home. So the Ger Tzedek has a Jewish soul according to the system of the Arizal. But there are other converts, like mentioned the Arab Rav. What about a Gentile who goes through the motions of becoming Jewish and accepts the Jewish law, but is doing it for an ulterior motive? But he does accept the Jewish religion. He keeps the Torah. He's ready to accept the Torah. Right? So that, like the Gemara calls them, Geirim Geruim. Those are bad converts. Those are converts that give us a very difficult time. But they're still converts, you know? So what are they? What about their souls? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just curious, what about nowadays can we accept converts? Is it a situation of relative ease and wealth for Jewish practice?
We have to be super careful today, of course. We have to make sure, we have to be 100% sure that they have no ulterior motive whatsoever. This is why the ratio of Ger Tzedek's, of converts that we should accept, to the amount of converts that we do accept, is minimal. Right? This is the reason why you heard that Rav Shach, when the issue of who is a Jew came up, right? Other rabbis were strongly for it, you know, to pass the law of who is a Jew, that only a conversion according to the Orthodox tradition should be accepted. Right? So Rav Shach says, what do you mean? And conversions according to the Orthodox tradition, I do accept. I don't accept that either. So why am I going to fight for, you know, anti-conservative and reform? I'm against Orthodox conversion also. That's what Rav Shach says, why it's not worth it to fight for the law. Because the truth of the matter is that we are not allowed to accept converts, except if they really show that they have no other motive but the search for truth. That is the only Ger Tzedek that we are allowed to accept. Now, so we still don't know what happens to the other Gerim. So it says the following. Since we believe then that every single Jewish soul has its roots in one of those 600,000 original souls, right? So somehow they are all connected. Can there be a Jew who is completely unconnected? Is there such a concept? A Jew without a connection with any roots at all, which means that in his genes, he's not connected to anything. It's as if all our spiritual genes have the impressions of the previous lives. Did you ever hear this? It's a very, very important concept in the Kabbalistic literature, that every single spiritual gene that we are calling, when it goes through a lifetime, right? I'm going through my life, I make an impression over my genetic code, and that impression will make a difference when this genetic code will be transferred to a new generation. That new generation won't have any memory of what I did, but the impression will be there. In other words, what our ancestors did in their lifetime will have an effect on our spiritual genetic code, so to speak, and it will affect our lives. This is my salvation in the body, which means what they do shapes our lives. And the genetic code actually, it changes according to what we did throughout our lifetime. We actually change, right? There is an actual mutation of the code as we live. And in every generation, you have the chance of rectifying some flaw in the code, which was done by one of my ancestors. As a matter of fact, it's incredible that the Ibn Ezra, I don't know if those who know about the Ibn Ezra, the Ibn Ezra was a super rationalist, and he interprets Poikeid Avoin Ovois Albonim Al Shileshim Val Ribeim. What does it mean? That he visits the sins of parents to children, children's children, up to the fourth generation. You know how he interprets it? If a parent does a sin, so that flaw can be rectified in future generations. This is how we interpret the statement. Right, so the Ibn Ezra is obviously talking about this Kabbalistic concept of the continuity of yourself even though you are not alive anymore. In other words, you continue even though you are not alive anymore through your future, the future people who took over your genetic spiritual codes, and they will rectify whatever flaw you did. Right? Right, so he says that the rectification, before it actually becomes like a sickness of the whole gene, the spiritual gene, is only up to the fourth generation. But that doesn't matter, the concept is still the same. Except according to him, you only have four generations to rectify. After that, it becomes like a real deep sickness that then requires another process altogether. Now, so what happens to a Jew who actually has genetically no Jewish roots? How is it possible? One of two ways. Either through conversion with an ulterior motive, like the Arab Rav, for instance. So he becomes a Jew. In actuality, he's a Jew. But he has no source in any soul. Remember, a Ger Tzedek, according to the Arizal, his Jewish roots in his soul, otherwise he wouldn't have such a desire to convert. But what about a convert without that drive? He just became Jewish. Or there can be, through those mutations, there can be such a thing. Parents who actually erase the code. Remember, we say that in every generation you can tamper with the codes. There is such an extreme case of people who actually erase the codes that in the future generation there will be absolutely nothing there. There is a concept of like a clean slate, like a Jewish soul which has no roots. It's as if the past is forgotten by him, erased, forgotten, which number represents those kind of souls, the forgotten souls. Exactly. Now we can understand what it means. What does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu all of a sudden forgot 3,550 Jews? Moshe forgets. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. The Midrash is expressing the idea of the forgotten Jews, the Jews without roots, the Jews who are not attached. So Jews who are Jews without spiritual roots, which way can they be rectified? Can they survive as Jews? Only one way. What? But in their lifetime, they're going to be lost. They're going to have nothing to try. Which way can they rectify that flaw? To stick to the amudim, to the columns. So what did they? Why did they become the 3,550? Hooks. Hooks. What is the symbolism of hooks? Attachment. Attachment. You can't make it on your own. You can only survive through your attachment. So if somehow your genetic code was erased, remember, you still have a chance. Vovim Lamudim. And those were the forgotten Jews. That is the meaning.
I think it's just the most important thing about him, but also to get the hits of the pulse as well.
You know, the idea is connections. It's always connections. Not Adon. The Adonim are the things that keep the tabernacle going. These are the connections. Connect yourself. That's the idea behind it.
You connect yourself to what?
To the Adnei HaKodesh. In Pasuk, Vovim LaAmudim, to the Amudim. You know what Amudim? The Omud? You know what Omud? The thing that allows the house to stand is the Omud.
What's that representing?
The Omud, you know what the Omud always represents. The Omud represents what allows the Jewish people to survive. No, no, no. It says the Amudim. In Vayim Me'asa Kikor, it's Ve'Israel V'Shvam Yisrael, Vovim La'Amudim. Vovim La'Amudim. Hooks attached to the Omud. The columns, the what do you call? The pillars. The pillars. Attach yourself to the pillars. You know what the symbolism is? The pillars of Klal Yisrael.
Torah,
Tzaddikim, and Talmidei Chachomim are the pillars of Klal Yisrael. By attaching yourself to them, then you'll survive. You won't be forgotten anymore. Yeah.
That's also, I mean, the writings were released from Mitzrayim anyway. Before,
again?
According to the Midrash, there was a large proportion of Jews were died in Mitzrayim anyway. So how was it 3,500 people with no attachment?
Yeah, remember when we mentioned the amount of Jews that died in Egypt, which one, which measure do you have in mind again? The measure that says what?
It says that they died during the year period of time.
How many? You're talking about the measure that says 80%.
Yeah.
Right. There is a measure that says even more. So you remember how we learned the measures. That the measures is only describing the people who were worthy of dying, not the ones who actually died, because remember, Dosom Vavirom do come out of Egypt, even though they are not worthy of coming out of Egypt. Which means that that amount of 80% of the Jews dying during the days of darkness is describing what was supposed to happen, not what actually happened after Hashem, through His mercy, allowed some Jews to survive. Okay, that's the way we learn. They represent in that concept of Odom HaKadmon, which is made up of 600,000, they represent those external Jews. The Jews which are not part of the Binyan, but if they attach themselves, they can become part of the Binyan. They represent that. Who they are, we have no idea who they are. It never says who are part of the 600,000 or part of the 3,550. Let each one wonder, am I one of the 3,550 or am I one of the 600,000? I don't know, but it's irrelevant. It's the concept which is important. There are Jews who are external Jews that, unless they attach themselves, they don't have that inner force to survive.
You're saying that so many millions of Jews nowadays, half of them, majority of them are external?
Could very well be. You see, the numbers is never a problem, because you can have combinations of 3,550 souls which come to the trillions, if you want. You understand? Meaning the ratio should... doesn't bother us. That if the ratio should always be 600,000 in relation to 3,550, not necessarily. It could be that in some generations the 3,550 develop more because of the circumstances, which is more, it makes it easier for the 3,550 to develop. Okay, meaning it's possible to have a lot of Jews belonging to those kinds of souls.
You mean that one soul can be a million people?
Of course. One soul can be 600,000 people. You know who I'm referring to? The Gemara actually says it. Moshe Rabbeinu was a composite of all the 600,000 souls. He was the one man who was the composite. Actually, the Gemara says it. I mean, the Bali Kabbalim used that term, right? That just to explain the system. But the Gemara says it, that there was one Jew who was actually a composite of 600,000 souls. Moshe Rabbeinu.
Part of.
You see, the word part is irrelevant, you see, because we have no problem in souls. We have no problem of being ubiquitous. You can be in five places at the same time or a million places at the same time. You can be here and here and here. There's no problem of being in many places at the same time. All the souls are combined in Moshe Rabbeinu.
They were only in Adam Rishon,
correct. Originally, they were only in Adam Rishon. And then they started combining themselves.
the what Hashem said that he started a nation just with Moshe Rabbeinu?
Okay.
Is that why Akash Baruch said he'd start a nation just with Moshe Rabbeinu?
Sure, because that's what the Baal Kabbalah say, because Moshe Rabbeinu hid in him 600,000, right? Because the Gemara does it. Oz Yoshir Moshe Ubnei Israel, Shokul Moshe Keneged Kol Israel, and the meaning of it is Moshe had 600,000 souls, like the total of the Jewish people.
Souls are not specific to individuals.
Right, now, if we have the time, we would go into the details of that. There is one part of the soul. You know that there is such a thing as the five parts of the soul. Did you ever read about it? Nefesh, Ruach, Neshomo, Chayo, Yechido. There are five parts to that soul. There is one part which is only you and no one else, and that you can't share with anybody. That is the you, the essential you. But there is parts of the soul which you can share with thousands, millions of people. There are parts which is only you. Right? There is a part that's called Yechido. There is a part of the soul which is actually called Yechido. You know what the word Yechido means? Specific one. The specific one. Which means there is a specific part of your soul and there is a non-specific part of your soul. Right? It's like that, like your genetic traits. I mean, it's such a good analogy. Your genetic traits. You can have genetic traits of your uncle, your grandfather, your great-great-grandfather. But there could be something which is the real you, right? And no one else. So that's the Yechido. But most of your traits are a composite of your all your ancestors' traits, right? If you really would know what made up your genetic code, you would find like 300,000 of your relatives, each one adding, of your ancestors, adding a little bit to the totality of your personality. Exactly the same way it works with what they describe, what I call the spiritual genetic code, what they described as the Gilgul Neshamos, which is the genetic code for the souls. Now, let's go on. In Pasuk, let's go on now to chapter 39. One interesting comment that I have to tell you over. You know, there was a great yeshiva in Europe called the Yeshiva of Lublin. A great yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva is the one who started the idea of the Daf Yomi. Like a brilliant, brilliant man. And he really revolutionized Torah learning with this idea of the Daf Yomi, the daily page of Torah that you learn. His name was Reb Meir Shapiro. So he makes the following comment. Look at it. Look at this, he says. When the Jews gave money for the Egel, right? The same Jews who eventually are going to give money for the tabernacle are the same Jews who are giving money for the Egel, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu says clearly, if I don't give him an exact account, I know what they're going to say. Moshe is dishonest, right? How come no one ever asked for an account what happened with the Egels? You know, how much gold went into the Egel and how much gold was left over. How come nothing like that is recorded?
Right.
And you know, the Jews, you know, should have asked Aaron right after the Egel, first and foremost, give us an account. How come they never asked for an account?
It was a crooked idea.
Exactly. The point is like this. That's what he says. When your Yetzer Hara, when it's your evil inclination convincing you to give money for something, you will become completely careless. You can be a great businessman and all of a sudden your business abilities always, you know, disappear. Because your Yetzer Hara is taking over. All of a sudden, when you're doing something good, even though you decide to do something good, but since the Yetzer Hara is not on your side, so the Yetzer Hara takes another side. And what did you do? Wait a second, did you use the money correctly? Maybe you are spending too much money, you know? He says, this is what happens, because he was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva of Lublin, and he was saying it to the people who supported him. He says, you know, what do you mean that this should be led? You know, after all, you know, for the Egel, you wouldn't be asking for the account. So he based this on the Midrash that Moshe Rabbeinu actually said they're going to say the Talmud, right? You know what, let's step here, we'll continue.
People found their pennies when they go to Las Vegas and spend it all.
Exactly, yeah.